Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to this Peak Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, Chris Martinson. Now, in the crash course in Chapter 18, we cover something I call fuzzy numbers. And in there, we point out all the ways the government statistics are bent, stroked, massaged, manipulated, always with the net effect of making economic conditions seem rosier than they really are. Unemployment excludes discouraged workers, and GDP is overstated by understating the true price increases of consumption expenditures. But the worst statistical lie of them all, perhaps, is the Consumer Price Index, or CPI, which purports to measure inflation. Here today to discuss the true nature of inflation, with us is Ed Batowski, who created the Chapwood Index, an actual measure of inflation that is devoid of the usual statistical tricks. From the website chapwoodindex.com, we find this description. The Chapwood Index reflects the true cost of living increase in America. Updated and released twice a year, it reports the unadjusted actual cost and price fluctuation of the top 500 items on which Americans spend their after-tax dollars in the 50 largest cities in the nation. Ed, I really can't wait to dive into this with you. Thank you for agreeing to be on our program today.
Well, I appreciate more than you know having me and shining a light on this, because you know, I started this index many years ago, and I maybe we'll dive into why I started it, but it just blows me away how impactful the underreporting of the CPI is in the entire world. I mean, I can actually draw a conclusion that this underreporting has actually impacted the balance of power in the world. And I'll it might be a little bit of a reach, but I get there and it seems logical when I say it.
Well, fantastic. So how about we start here? Before we dive in, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Sure. Well, I'm a wealth manager. I grew up at Morgan Stanley in the business. I was very fortunate and somewhat lucky, but I became their top investment broker in the country. I actually had the most assets under management and did the most business back in 1998-99. And I eventually left Morgan Stanley in 02 and went over to Bank of America, which was a really bad move. And then I eventually just went off on my own. So I manage money. A lot of people know my work through a movie called Broke on ESPN. I do a lot of work with professional athletes, and I put that movie together. It's a documentary talking about how many people go broke and the financial struggles that athletes have. And now I manage a firm. It's called Chapwood Investments. In Dallas, and have clients on both coasts and around the country.
Fantastic. So let's get to the Chapwood Index. What initiated that? That's a big labor of love, I assume. What prompted you to start and create the Chapwood Index?
Well, this is what happened. My mother was dying from cancer, and we knew she was going to die. And I went home to surprise her on the last birthday that she was going to have. And when I surprised her, she actually surprised me by not being in the house. Now, she was still about 4 months away from passing away, but I went in and I couldn't find her. I drove down to the hospital. I drove, you know, the different places where she might be. And then she walks in from work. And what was shocking was I didn't even know she had a job. And I said, "Where have you been?" You know, out of love and concern. She said, "Well, I was at work." And I said, "You got a job?" And her words were, "Your father didn't adjust my alimony for COLA." And that statement right there was a statement that changed my life, because first I thought she just drank Tab, which was, I was like, "What do you mean COLA?" I didn't even know what COLA was, okay? Yeah. And as I looked into it, I found a man named Albert Singlinger who wrote an article about the manipulation of COLA, and how the government in 1983 started manipulating that number so it would be lower, so they didn't have to pay out as much money in government entitlement programs and increases in transfer payments of different kinds, along with government salaries. And that really caught my eye, because it made me realize that my mother, if she was having that alimony adjusted for COLA, she wouldn't be able to keep up with her standard of living anyway. And I wanted her to always live as a princess.
Of course. Thank you for that story. Very. I'm sorry for your loss. And also for the way in which you had to discover this ugly truth, which we all get to at some point, which is that this COLA or cost of living adjustment, there are good, solid reasons on the fiscal side why the government wants to keep that down. And so they have. So let's talk about this. The COLA is adjusted based on something called the Consumer Price Index, or CPI. What's wrong with the CPI?
Okay, well, there's many things, and you're right. This was done by the government to keep the government expenses down. But here is what people miss. The negative, unintended consequence of them manipulating this number is this. People in the middle income and lower income brackets in the private sector, their salaries go up based on that number. So an employer will say, well, you know what? The cost of living or the CPI went up 2%. So I'm going to give you 2.5% increase. And that's how that number impacts the world. And what's wrong with it? I mean, people can go, there's a man named John Williams, who you and I communicated over the internet about. Mm-hmm. John Williams does spectacular work in explaining how many different ways the government has manipulated the statistic. But up until 1983, they had looked at 1,700 items month after month after month without any manipulation. And then in 1983, they started playing games and saying, well, you don't need a steak. You could have had a hamburger, and that didn't go up as much, so we're not going to give you the price increase. The other thing that has never been part of it has been taxes and insurance costs. So that's never been part of the CPI. But you know, people should study it because it would make for a lot of boring radio. But they've been doing it, and they did it again in 93, 94 under the Boskin Commission. They've got lots of academics together to try to justify keeping that number low. And eventually they'll find someone who supports their thesis. Now, Democrats and Republicans are both, behind this because they all want to keep the amount of money the government spits out lower. But again, the negative unintended consequence is that people who work their tails off every day, follows the rules, and gets their increase on their salary based on that number, they are being literally, they're committing financial suicide by following that and not challenging what their cost of living increase was, because the CPI doesn't reflect reality anymore.
Well, absolutely. And at the risk of creating the boring radio, the details matter, because what these little wiggles and jiggles and statistical hitches do is they shave a percent or two off. And it doesn't sound like a lot, but over time, we're talking percentages. So this is a compounding function. You know, you just take a percent off for 10 years, you've got a big number on your hands when all is said and done. And so this is something I do cover in great detail in the work I put out. Just to track it, not to try and recreate it. I'm just pointing out, you know, the hedonic substitution weighting, hedonics, big word. Here's an example. According to the Bureau of Economic Analysis, when I look at the cost of new cars, they say they've been going down every single year. But then I wander over because of hedonics, right? Because the cars are getting better and quality's better. And so they adjust and they do all their funny things. I don't even purport to know what they do. But all I know is they say cars are going down in price. But when I look at the actual lease, total lease terms and new car expenditures, those go up every year. And they're just like two ships crossing in the night. So we cover a lot of that. Your Chapwood Index, though, doesn't try to do any of that. What does it do?
No. What I did, and I was going to go into that. I was just afraid you might get upset if I got that boring.
We go into that detail all the time.
So what I did is I started thinking that in my business, I wanted to make sure that I was building portfolios that weren't just efficient, but got people the cost of the income or the rate of return they needed. Yeah. Well, then I thought, well, my goodness, what I need to do is give people a list of everything they spend money on and have them track quarter by quarter exactly the increases, so then I can determine, to do a better job as a financial advisor, I can determine what we need to target. So I actually sent this out to my clients, and I got a lot of people telling me to go, go stick it somewhere, because there's no way in the world they were going to do that. Mm-hmm. So then I thought, you know what? I have a lot of friends on Facebook. I got a hold of a list of the 50 major metropolitan areas and found people in every city, and I gave them a job, and I sent them, I asked everybody to send me what items they spend their after-tax dollars on, and I got about 4,000 different items, and then I took the 500 that most frequently appeared on the list from my friends. I then gave that list to my Facebook friends in all the different cities, and we have been tracking it, specifically the same item in every city for that period of time. And then we weight it based on what percentage of a normal income people spend. So if it's on a house, well, there's a percentage of your income you spend on the house. There's a percentage you spend on food. So we weight it that based on that. I never give out the exact numbers, because the last thing I need is people a lot smarter than me, and there are a lot of people smarter than me, really going at me. And that's not the purpose of the index. The purpose of the index is to let people know that if you live in California, your cost of living increase, not your cost of living, but your cost of living increase goes up somewhere between 12 and 13.5% a year. And if you're not making 13% more in a salary, then you are losing purchasing power. And that's why people fall further and further behind. If you're in New Mexico, it's about 7%. And I use this, and my Facebook friends have been terrific. I have a couple of them that, bailed out. Matter of fact, that's what happened. And I just released my numbers today for 2015.
And I'm looking them here on your website, and my eyebrows are up on my forehead, because this is really, really far away from what the Federal Reserve is talking about. They're afraid of deflation. Oh my gosh, inflation is too low. There's nothing too low. Let me just average this by eyeball. 10%. I can do 10% in my head. At 10%, using the rule of 72, that means that my cost of living is going to double in just 7 years. This is what you're saying. For these people living in these areas, every 7 years, basically their cost of living is going to double.
That is exactly accurate. And what's not is the CPI number, which has averaged 1.5% over the last 5 years. So basically over the last 5 years, the average increase for all 50 major cities, and I break it down on the website city by city, but the average is 10%, and the average on the CPI is 1.5%. So it's easy to say that for people who are in the middle income, lower income, or people who are living off of a pension that is adjusted based on the CPI, they have lost 8.5% purchasing power if everything was adjusted to the CPI year over year. And you do that over 5 years, you do it over 10 years. Now you know why there's such a separation. I have to highlight one point. There's a lot of discussion in this country, Chris, about the cost, like how the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. Here's the difference, and something that people don't highlight, which I'm happy to do today. Mm-hmm. People who are upper income earners, generally speaking, their income is dictated by their performance, not from a salary increase tied to the CPI. Right. These people take risks. If they do well, they make a lot of money. If they do poorly, they make no money. But that's what a one percenter, as everyone in this country tends to call them, works. They don't make money based on salary. They make money based on performance. And that's why we've had such a widening of that gap.
And they make their money in many cases on their assets as well. So a paycheck is a sure way to the poorhouse by what we're talking about, because if your paycheck's growing at CPI and you're 8.5 full points away from reality, you're going to fall behind. And I get goosebumps. I guess I'm nerdy this way. I get goosebumps when we talk about this, because all of a sudden, Ed, everything that I'm reading about makes sense. Allegedly, my economy is doing really well, 2-3% growth, right? But I look at the actual levels of employment. I look at the number of people on food stamps. We look at maybe even how the political parties are developing, and we discover that there's real stress there. Stress that you wouldn't detect in a 4.9% unemployment world. Stress that you wouldn't detect in a growing economy, but we feel it there. And your work is explains that, right? That's the way I tie those pieces together.
It does. And I'd like to make a comment about the jobs numbers at some point. But in terms of focusing, at the very beginning, I said how it's changed the balance of the country, right, or of the world. Let me now jump on your nerdiness for a moment and double down on it. And let me share this with you. The reason our country isn't as powerful as we used to be is because we don't have enough money in this country to pay for what we spend. The reason that we spend so much more is because people, once they reach a threshold of pain, they will do anything to take care of their families. They will do anything to take care of themselves and so on. So what do? Well, they reach out to the government when they have no other choice. And it puts more strain on the government. What then? The government doesn't have the money. So we go and we borrow the money from other countries. Well, I got news for you. We're borrowing money from other countries to pay for programs because of the CPI manipulation and overspending. And the biggest part of our expenditures are these, in, you know, I'll call them entitlement programs or government programs. And those are only having more strain and more demand on them because people are falling behind in the private sector. So China loans us money and Russia loans us money and so do all the OPEC nations because, you know, first of all, we need it. But the reason we need so much of it is because so many Americans are falling behind and they need assistance. And to me, that goes back to that 1983 decision to start manipulating the CPI.
Yeah, great. Thank you for that. And this is why I focus on it, is because they feel like white lies, and I understand, you know, why the government does it. And you know, this has happened under every administration I track. This is not political statement. This isn't Democrats. This isn't Republicans. As you mentioned before, it's both, right? And both parties have this interest in sort of shaving at these things. Your index then is tracking things. I'm reading off a list here that you've got on your website. It's Starbucks coffee, it's Advil, it's insurance, gasoline, sales and income taxes, tolls, fast food restaurants, toothpaste, oil changes, car washes. I recognize everything on this list. These are the things I spend money on. And so you're saying that if I live in one of these 50 major metropolitan areas, I'm going to experience roughly 10% increases across these.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know what? Anyone listening right now, they all know it's true.
Yeah.
Ask anybody, did your cost of living not go up? Does it not cost any more? Of course it does. This is why, when was the last time you saw a happy old person? All right? It's because of this kind of nonsense, and they don't understand the virus that they live with every day. It's not just old people, but everybody. They live with this, and now with interest rates low, you know, any money in savings, they're getting nothing on it or 1%, and they're just committing financial suicide by having it there because of this manipulation. And I want to shine a light on it, and I'm really happy, you know, you do the work you do, because this needs to be discussed.
It absolutely does. And here's my, I promise people listening, last bit of nerdiness, but I want to convey this because it's actually really important. And I know it sounds a little complex, but of those three ways that they statistically manipulate these, the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, weighting. I want to talk about weighting. Weighting's important because I love what you said about how you weighted yours, and I understand you're not going to release the actual weightings, but no matter how many smart people want to like shine a light at on the way you do your weighting, you can't do worse than what I'm about to describe. So healthcare. Healthcare is weighted in at less than 5% in the current CPI basket. So that means that $1 out of $20, according to the people who assemble the CPI, is spent on healthcare, because that's what it's weighted at. But when we wander over to the Bureau of Economic Analysis and we peer into our GDP numbers, we discover that healthcare spending is 18% of our total gross domestic product. So I can't reconcile those numbers even. They're not even in the same zip code with each other at this point in time. The idea that, you know, 5% of the basket is healthcare. And I can tell you that for people in my position as a small business owner who is self-insured, thank you for the Affordable Care Act that just went up 28% for me last year, by the way. Thank you very much for that, everybody who was responsible. That is like one of the largest and most obvious gaps that people can understand completely. Look at the drug price increases last year from all the majors, not even including that pharma bro guy and all his craziness, but drug prices, cost, trips to the ER, delivery room if you're in maternity, or watch what happens when your new insurance policy is delivered and your deductibles have skyrocketed and the covered options have declined and all of that. That's what happens when we weight something inappropriately, is even if it's going up a lot, we end up counting it less. your index then is weighted, but it's weighted towards what people actually spend their money on. It's the whole universe, and you're coming up with an average of 10%.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the way I get the information is as pure as can be. It's directly from people in those cities, looking. Now I used to do it quarterly, and then people started revolting. They didn't want to do it, so I do it semi-annually now. But you know what? The numbers are there, and nobody can refute, these are the numbers. You can call up companies and say, how much did this go up? How much did that go up? And when you start doing it, nobody's done the work. I have. And when you do this, it's kind of sobering, because now you finally understand, what is going on and why people can't keep, keep living the lifestyle that they, had grown accustomed to. My parents, sadly, as I mentioned earlier, had my mother passed away, so did my father. But when we would get cards from my in-laws with the Christmas money, it was $100, it was $50. Now my kids just kind of get a card. Mm-hmm. And my kids are older now, and I said, don't worry, it's the manipulation of the CPI. So every time they get a bad present, they go, I know, manipulation of the CPI, Dad. I went, yeah. So you can tell what an exciting family I have, right? It's okay. It's the manipulation of the CPI. It's not her fault.
And did you grow up scared of monsters under your bed? No, much, much worse.
Exactly. Much worse. It's the CPI manipulators. That's the thing you got to worry about.
Well, here's a question. So another index came out a little while ago. I'd love to get your views on this. The Billion Prices Index, which purportedly tracks the prices of billion items. A huge difference between what they're reporting. They seem to come in really close to the CPI with very minor sort of, sub percentage adjustments. And you're coming up with a very different number. How is that?
Well, I mean, if you're tracking a billion items, that you can track lots of things that don't go up, but the things that matter are the things that you use.
Right.
I mean, that's great. Keep doing that, but it sounds kind of worthless to me. I'd rather only look at the things based on what we actually spend our money on.
Yeah.
I don't buy dentures, so I don't, it doesn't really matter to me. What matters is the amount of items, the amount of money we spend on what we actually use. I'd love to look at the list, but that's gotta be a pretty boring thing to look at. But, it just doesn't have any relevance to the real world, just like the CPI doesn't.
Yeah. I don't buy a billion things every year, so I'm pretty sure that index doesn't really track me either. Ed, question, if you had any response from or interactions with the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the keepers of the CPI, to your index, have they responded?
No, but I will tell you this. I rarely ever promote this. And what is amazing to me is how many people find my index really refreshing and basically confirming what it is that they had already had in their minds. I got a call one day from the SEIU, which is the Service Industry Labor Union, and they wanted to use my index in their negotiations, which I thought was pretty cool. But I've never really marketed it. I don't make any money at it. I really just did it to honor, what went on with my mom. But I also look at a lot of older people, and I want them to understand, one of the only ways you fix something is if you understand it.
Right.
And so I do want people to look at it more. I do want people to talk about it more. I want people in my industry to focus on it. So when they're building a portfolio that historically gets them a 6% rate of return and your client's increase is 10%, you're really not doing anything for them except helping them commit financial suicide.
At a slower rate. Maybe than somebody else who's getting 3%.
So exactly.
If a measure of a country is how it treats its citizens, particularly its poorest citizens, I look at what the Federal Reserve did in driving interest rates to zero. So anybody's on a fixed income looking for either a bond return, something reasonably safe, or maybe a return on a CD or a savings account even, they've been just absolutely given zippo for that. And then on the other side, the other branch of the government, because I consider the Federal Reserve just a branch of the government, even though it's a private sort of a thing.
Yep.
And then the other side is over here manipulating the cost of living adjustments. And so there are 10,000 people apparently are retiring per day from the boomer cohort. It really sounds like they're getting squeezed from both ends, and they're just getting, I mean, really treated very badly in this story.
Without any question. I mean, it is a double negative play. Rates are low, your costs are going up, and I call it modern day stagflation. Stagflation is, probably the most devastating economic situation you can be in, because in order to cure one leg, which is slow, economic growth, another leg is, high unemployment, which we have, and then also, rising costs, you have to then implement something to fix one part of it that hurts, the other legs of it. And modern day stagflation, I call it that because we're in a period where we're not reporting the numbers accurately, which is the great work that, you're bringing to people's attention. And because of that, people don't realize we're in stagflation, but we are. The government numbers on jobs, I mean, I'm just going to throw this out there. One of the things that gets me about that one statistic is they report numbers based on what's projected, Chris, mm-hmm. but not what is needed. So I started figuring out what is it that we do need? Because when we report these numbers, the numbers should all be reported based on what is needed. And what we need is 44% of the revenue into the U.S. government comes from federal income taxes. So let's assign half of the $500 billion deficit to federal income taxes. So I'll make it easy. Let's say that $250 billion that we are short needs to come from new jobs. Well, each new job, give it a $50,000 income and give it a 25% tax, that means each new job represents $12,500 new dollars to the government. Mm-hmm. So how many $12,500 new jobs do we need? We need 20 million, which comes out to be 1.6 million net full-time jobs a month for 12 months. And this last report, we had 242,000 jobs, supposedly, but 88% of them were part-time.
Right.
So we need 1.6 million full-time new jobs a month. And last month, we got 29,040. Now, that is you just heard it, and you're in this, and anybody listening, it's like, wait a second. Wow, because all the news reports were, what a great job. We beat the forecasted number. And I just want to throw up every time I see this.
Yeah, it's
it's
really far from reality, and it feels like at this point to me that it's more about image management and perception management, which makes it seem all just a little bit fake and false. And we've had the best statistical recovery that money can buy, at least thin air money. So I'm really curious, Ed, how do you work with your clients, and what can somebody do who's caught in this vice right now?
Find a way to supplement your income, because I volunteer at a church once a month, and I speak to families about debt and about the markets and so on. And these people are not wealthy people, and they all suffer from the same thing, not being able to make ends meet. And I tell all of them that the majority of them are middle-income families that have salary increases based on the CPI. And I said, the best thing you can do is go find another job to supplement what you're doing. The way to cure this, you can only cut so much out of your life, and then you'll be cutting more and more, and before you know it, you'll have very little. You can do that, or you can become a revenue producer and go make more money. And you can do that outside of your salary job. I love multi-level marketing, but the truth is that's what they have to do. Otherwise, they will just sit back and their lives will get much tougher every single year.
And this is absolutely the trend that's been in play for a long time. People say, hey, what happened to that one income family from the 70s? Well, it got inflated away is what happened. Yep. It is not possible to really make do at minimum wage in a lot of the countries, which is adjusted slowly and sort of in alignment with the CPI. But that tension that we're feeling in the country now is that it is literally impossible to make do on a minimum wage salary. By the way, minimum wage for my family, if I was earning minimum wage, is almost enough to cover my health insurance costs if I had to buy it outright. And I know there's like programs that would supplement and all of this and that, but just that one item, if I wasn't getting subsidized on it, would consume 100% of my income. That was not true when my father was raising a family.
No, I mean, you call it the minimum wage, which is a different discussion, which is an appropriate one, but different. But think about the person who makes $100,000 a year. Their taxes right away, they're at $50,000. So now you divide that. I mean, you know, so what do we have? You know, somewhere about $4,500 a month, and that is very, very difficult to raise a family of you know, two on, because let's just say you have a mortgage, call it $2,000. What do you have left? That's the point. And so you're right. That's why now more and more people have two people working, and you made an excellent point there that is one of the reasons why we have more and more people who are, you know, two working people in a family. I need to point that out to my wife. I really do, because I never even thought about it quite the way you put it, but that's exactly right. You know, we have a lot of families where people, you know, two the man and the wife are the husband and wife are both working, and yeah, that's going to be a good conversation tonight.
So well, let's be sure to let me know how that goes, and if it goes well, I'll talk to my wife about that, and we'll see. We'll see if we can start a movement of sorts. This is very real. And joking aside, that this is really, we're damaging ourselves is how I look at it. And that annoys me a little bit. I admit, I get a little emotional about this because it's really, you know, there's white lies, fibbing, but this is really self-harm. And I don't know anybody really talking about this on the political campaign trail. And by the way, I'm not one of these people that looks to politics to really solve anything. But as you mentioned, first you have to recognize the problem. The first thing you have to do is admit you've got that problem, and then you can begin to figure out how to address it. It still feels to me like both parties in this country are very comfortable with the lying to ourselves stage of this. And I'm very interested in figuring out how to go about really revealing this to people. So either anecdotally or more broadly, how do people respond to this when you know, in your practice, if you could, when you're advising them and you show them the reality?
They, by the way, I got to tell you, I love this. I love what we're doing here, this interview. I think that, you know, there's so much good that we're talking about. And I hope a lot of people, you know, find a way to share this, because the more people that talk about it, you know, it might actually affect who they elect. I'm actually a very political person, just so you know. Mm-hmm. And I lean far right on almost everything. And I've actually advised a couple of campaigns and shared some of this with them. And, you know, the first way to start off is, why do prices rise? And ask people, why do they go up? Especially right now when commodity prices are dropping to almost historic low levels. And people kind of looking, well, the reason it is, in a lot of cases, is, you know, cost for regulations. We know that. And obviously, you know, cost, you know, for more taxes. Well, why do you get more taxes? You get more taxes because you have programs and spending programs, and you have to pay for those. Well, not that you have to, because we can always borrow money, but that's the goal, is to have a balanced budget. But you want to spend, you know, you want to spend enough that, you know, of what, you know, you want to have enough expenditures that can be covered by taxes. Well, then you have a slower economy because you have more taxes. And because you have a slower economy, you then tax more. And it kind of just starts to, you know, have this, you know, rolling effect that you're actually creating a slower economy because of taxes, and you don't get the growth, you don't get the jobs. And as a result of that, you have to raise taxes again. And that's why these prices are rising. And we're already at a level that we can't sustain. I explain this to these people, and you know what happens? They say, "Well, can you break it down into 30 seconds?" And I promise you, three campaigns said that. And I said, "Well, why do we have to have 30 seconds? That's probably the most important thing you can talk about. And why do you want to make it 30 seconds?" And they say, "No, everything has to be 30 seconds." And I was like blown away, because it wasn't just one, it was three Republican candidates. Everything was, "Can you break it down into 30 seconds?" I'm not kidding you.
Yeah. And so here we are. It brings back that John Maynard Keynes quote of you know, not one man in a million can diagnose inflation, which is why it's the loved practice of politicians everywhere, because you can really get away with deficit spending, and it's very hard for people to detect that that's why their lives are progressively getting worse. You know, you're delivering something, but you're taking it away that they don't get it. So this is a really important conversation to have, and I want to have it before Venezuela-style inflation visits my country, before we lose our standing in the world, before you know, we ruin our currency by just trying to print our way to prosperity, which has never worked ever in all of history. Maybe this time is different. Maybe Janet Yellen's smarter than any Roman politician could ever dare dream, but I doubt it. And those are my concerns. But this is really important to start with this one simple recognition. You are not crazy if you feel like your inflationary experience is vastly different from what you're being told it is. The very definition of cognitive dissonance, anybody listening, if it feels like it's worse than it is, that's the reality. Go with that. And I love, just, you know, by way of commentary, Larry Summers coming out saying, hey, we don't need the $100 bill, just druggies and criminals need it, right? In this whole war on cash they're trying to sort of get out of the gate. I'm like, Larry, you haven't been shopping lately. $100 is what I use to buy a single bag of groceries now if it's got meat in it, right?
yeah. So. They're and but here's the thing. They know this. I've actually called up the producers at one of the shows at Fox, and I'm proud to say, you know, I get to appear from time to time on Fox, and I know some of these producers. And there's a man that I want to debate, and it's Austin Goolsbee. And the reason I want to debate him is he's a smart guy, and it's because of people like Goolsbee and people who, you know, share information that they know is not correct to keep this liberal agenda going in the country, where we continue to spend so much more money. And when we get a number that's the jobs number saying it's good, when it's nowhere even close to being good, it's not even on the same planet as good.
Or as what is necessary. And of course, the jobs number, a whole nother discussion, but see that the over 55 crowd has taken the lion's share of the jobs gains, not because they want to, but because they need to, as you just described. Yeah. But we're losing a generation here. Again, much like Europe is losing, you know, by the headlines, Europe's going to say, oh, you know, our headline unemployment isn't that bad. But the truth is that they're actually about to lose an entire generation of people who may make it to adulthood without having a job. Right. That's not good. So playing with the statistics, you know, it helps make things look better, but it doesn't help us have the right conversation, understand what we need to do, make priorities, basically act like adults. Things that any business That's person right. has to do, I guess. So, Ed, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This is really good work that you're doing. I really hope that the index continues, that you can continue to have your wonderful volunteers perform this important service. Anybody listening, you can find this at chapwoodindex.com. Any other way for people to track this and follow you?
That's the best way. I don't do much more than publish it every 6 months and then do some TV shows and radio shows to talk about it. And it's just ironic that today was the day I released it from 2015, and I was on your show. I got to tell you, you do a great job. It's a pleasure to be on your show, so thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And Ed, I really appreciate your time today, and I'd love to revisit this in 6 months, perhaps.
Would look forward to it. Thank you.